Larry David began as a stand-up comic and was a cast member, along with Michael Richards, of Fridays, the ABC late-night sketch series patterned after NBC's Saturday Night Live. David also worked for Saturday Night Live briefly long ago, then returned in 2015 for what became a wildly successful series of guest spots featuring his imitation of presidential candidate Bernie Sanders. Earlier that same year, Larry David spoke with Fresh Air contributor Dave Davies.
When I told my wife I was going to be interviewing you, she says, I want to know how that guy got the way he is. And, of course, she's assuming that guy is the guy she's seen on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
That doesn't sound so good to me.
Well,
How am I? I'd like to ask your wife, and yes, and how am I? What is this that you're seeing?
Well, it's the guy on Curb Your Enthusiasm, I suppose. You know, and we'll talk about whether that's how close that is to the real Larry David. But I do want you to tell us about where you grew up. You grew up in Brooklyn. Tell us about the neighborhood.
I grew up in Brooklyn in in Sheepshead Bay. I lived right under the Belt Parkway, and there were four buildings, which was my little universe. My friends, my 5, 6, 7, 8 friends, we all lived in this building. And it was a very happy childhood as far as I remember. We played sports all the time, walked to school, came home from school, played ball. In the winter, we'd play basketball in freezing temperatures. And for every possible, we would invent games. And not too many girls in my life, I must say, though.
And did you have extended family in the neighborhood or in the building?
I did. I had aunts and my aunt and uncle and my cousins were right next door. My grandmother and my uncle and my cousin were on the third floor. So there was no privacy. People were running in and out of the house all the time. Everybody knew your business.
Did you see humor in it at the time? Did you make friends laugh?
No, I wasn't funny at all. I didn't even suspect that I had a sense of humor until I went to college. And then something kind of changed. I don't know what happened. Perhaps it was meeting new friends and being in a different environment that unleashed something in me. I don't know.
Did you have any sense of your future back then? Do you remember?
Just whatever it was, in my head, it was bleak. I don't remember having any ambitions, any goals, any dreams. It was always, how am I going to get by? What am I going to do? But I didn't really, to be honest, I didn't really give it much thought. Even in college, I didn't give it much thought. I was having fun in college, and basically when people ask me what I was going to do, I just said, no, something will turn up. What that was, I had no idea.
And did your parents have any particular expectation?
Zero. Zero expectations. My mother, I've said this before, she wanted me to work in the post office. She wanted me to be a mailman because she thought, I'd get a pension and I'd be taken care of. I would have security. And that was her dream. That was the best case scenario, that I would be a mailman.
You were going to be Newman.
I was going to be Newman, exactly. Newman was very happy.
Steady work. You got a health plan.
Right. Newman is one of the happiest guys on television. Come on.
Right.
Yeah, and the hours were good.
Right.
You know, they just dropped some mail off. It seemed like a decent job.
How did your parents react to your success?
They were quite stunned by it. When Seinfeld was the number one show in the country, my mother would call me up and go, Larry, do they like you? Do they think you're doing a good job? Are they going to keep you? What do they say to you? Do they tell you you're good? She was very insecure.
How did you get into comedy? You said you were in college having fun, no thought of a particular future.
Yeah, then I got out of college and I was funny with my friends, and my friend's wife said to me, "You should be a comedian." And I thought, really, it just hadn't occurred to me. And then I went to the improvisation, to watch a show. And as I'm watching the show, I'm starting to think that, hey, maybe Jane's right. Maybe I could do this. In fact, not only am I starting to think I could do it, I think I could be really funny up there. Not only that, I'm going to go up there right now. I go up to the owner of the club, Bud Friedman, and I say, I'd like to go on. Now, I'm just sitting in the audience on a Saturday night. I leave my seat, and I go talk to the owner, and I say to the owner of the club that I want to go on. And this is probably the most insane thing I've ever done in my life. And he said to me, who are you? I said, I'm just sitting in the audience. He said, no, you can't go on. Are you a comedian? I said, no. He said, no, you have to audition, and then if you pass the audition, then you could start going on. So thank God he said no, because had he said yes and I had gone up, it would have been a disaster. I may never walked up on a stage again for the rest of my life. But I started to put an act together, and then I went down to the Village, to a place called Gertie's Folk City, and I got on stage for the first time. A week later, I went to Gil Hodges Bowling Alley in Brooklyn and got on stage for the second time. And then for the third time, I went to Catch a Rising Star, and I passed the audition, and then I started working out at Catch a Rising Star.
Well, you know, we have a little piece of tape, and this is from Susie Essman, your friend, who, of course, appeared on Curb Your Enthusiasm. And she was at an appearance, and she was recalling her early days with you in stand-up. Let's listen.
Larry was a comic. Larry started as a stand-up comic, and I knew him from Catch a Rising Star. We probably met in 1985, 1986. And he was a legendary. He's what we call a comedian's comedian, meaning that he would get on stage and the comedians would stand in the back of the room. And Larry's on. We'd all come running into the room to watch him because you knew something brilliant and original was going to happen. But the audience half the time stared at him like they had no idea what the hell he was talking about. And he was very, very touchy. You know, sometimes if like the whole audience is laughing and you had a stomach ache and had a bad look on your face, that would be it. He'd storm off the stage. You know, or one time I remember I introduced him and you know, ladies and gentlemen, Larry David, and he came on the stage and he just looked at the audience and he just went, never mind. And he just walked off. Just walked off. But his material was brilliant. He just never figured out that other thing of how to connect to an audience. That wasn't his thing.
And that's Susie Essman talking about our guest Larry David and his early days in stand-up. So does she have it right?
She's, that was pretty accurate. Yeah.
Do you remember the time you came in, looked at the audience, and walked off?
Yes, I do. I didn't say never mind. I think I said I don't think so.
And why? I mean, what was it about the audience?
I didn't like the looks of them. I didn't like how they responded to the comic who was on before me, and I just didn't see that it was going to be a successful outing. So I decided to do a preemptive attack.
You're not going to let them reject you. You're going to reject them.
Exactly.
You know, when I heard this story and when I read about, I mean, have you struggled with stand-up and how all the comedians loved you, but audiences didn't always connect. And, you know, when you talk to people in show business, so many of them say, well, you know, I really want to follow my artistic voice and do interesting work, not just do what any schlock that's commercially successful. And when I look at your career, I mean, it strikes me that you actually did do that. I mean, you really did stick to what you believed in, and you found these vehicles, and it's an incredible success now because, I mean, it's a particular Larry David way of looking at the world and finding humor in it. And you did stick to your own vision, and it really worked. Is that how you see it?
Well, it didn't seem like I had much of a choice. I don't think that, I don't think that my hand would have cooperated with my brain if my brain was telling my hand to write something it didn't really want to write. But I remember when there was some interference from NBC with Seinfeld when we first started doing it. And fortunately, I didn't have a family at the time. So it was very easy for me to say to them, no, I'm quitting. I'm not going to do that. I don't want to do that, and I can't do it. And for me, it wasn't a big deal to just pack up and go home. Like I said, I didn't have a family. It's much harder. That's the first piece of advice I'll give anybody who wants to get into this. Don't have a family for a while until you're successful, because it'll just make it very hard to ever get out of things, and you'll always have to compromise. But I didn't have to compromise because I didn't have a family.
And what was it NBC wanted you to do?
You know, they just didn't like the direction of the show. For example, the Chinese restaurant episode.
Right, the whole thing.
They hated that show. They didn't even want to air it. And, you know, there was a big meeting about the kind of shows they liked and the kind of shows they didn't like. And, you know, I just said, well, I'm not going to be able to do that. So I just thought that I would quit. But then I learned another lesson, that when you say no, you invariably get your way. And it's a wonderful feeling. I can't believe I never did it before.
No, she's not going to do it.
Yeah, you just say no. And then they go, okay, well, you don't have to.
You became friends with Jerry Seinfeld doing stand-up together, and the two of you conceived of this incredible hit TV show, Seinfeld. And, of course, everybody knows the four characters, and that George Costanza is, I guess, somewhat based on you. Did you ever consider playing that role yourself?
No. It was never mentioned. I never thought of it. Jerry never thought of it. Furthest thing from my mind. And, by the way, I couldn't have done it anyway. There's no way that I could have. First of all, they wouldn't have let me do it. But even had they let me do it, there's no way that I could have done that and also have been the executive producer of the show. It would have been way too hard. I mean, I had a 24/7 job just on the writing end of it and the producing end. So there's no way I could have been in it.
I wonder if you could share a bit of how you talked to Jason Alexander about the character and the role and how you felt about what he did with it.
First of all, I never even spoke to him about it. We auditioned a number of people to play George, hadn't really found anyone. And then this tape was sent in from New York. And Jerry and I watched the tape, and it was Jason auditioning in New York with a casting director, reading with a casting director, just sitting on a stool. I heard 10 seconds, and I went, oh, boy, there he is, this guy, this is the guy. And I never had to say one word to him about the character or anything like that. He just had it right from the beginning. He was great. What a fantastic actor. Gave me so many laughs watching him do that.
We're going to play a clip from Seinfeld, and there's a million we could choose, but I thought we would do one of Big Stein, George Steinberg.
Okay.
And, of course, people who know the show will know that there were many episodes where George Costanza worked for the New York Yankees, and he would be occasionally summoned to the office of the famous owner, George Steinbrenner, and you would do the voice. It would be shot from behind another actor, so you didn't actually see him. And this is an episode, I think, in which Steinbrenner has summoned George because he's heard rumors about George's political views.
You wanted to see me, Mr. Steinbrenner?
Yes, George, I did. Come in. George, the word around the office is that you're a communist.
A communist? I am a Yankee, sir, first and foremost.
You know, George, it struck me today that a communist pipeline into the vast reservoir of Cuban baseball talent could be the greatest thing ever to happen to this organization.
Sir?
You could be invaluable to this franchise. George, there's a southpaw down there nobody's been able to get a look at. Something Rodriguez. I don't really know his name. You get yourself down to Havana right away.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Do my best.
Good. Merry Christmas, George. And bring me back some of those cigars in the cedar boxes. You know, the ones with the fancy rings? I love those fancy rings. They kind of distract you while you're smoking. The red and yellow are nice. It looks good against the brown of the cigar. The Maduro, I like the Maduro wrapper. The darker, the better. That's what I say. Of course, the Claro's good, too. That's more of a pale brown, almost like a milky coffee. I find the ring size very confusing. They have it in centimeters.
And George Costanza has wandered out of the room. That's our guest, Larry David, as the voice of George Steinbrenner. It's funny, as we listen to that, it's not quite your speaking voice. You did some stuff there with that.
Well, hey, you know, Tim, I was doing an impression.
You're an actor.
Oh, sure. No, we brought in some people to read for Mr. Steinbrenner, and nobody really got it. And Jerry said, "Well, what are you looking for? How does it go?" And all of a sudden, I started talking like this. You know, he's a big blustery guy. He kind of talks like that. And Jerry said, "Yeah, you should do it. That's funny." So that's how that happened.
Uh-huh. Did you ever hear how Steinbrenner himself reacted to the bit?
I think he liked it. Steinbrenner was unfamiliar with the show. His grandchildren watched it, and his grandchildren talked him into letting us use his name. The last episode, I think, of the 96 season, we came up with the idea to actually fly him in and put him on the show. Because up to that point, we'd only been seeing the back of his head and I was doing his voice. And then we thought it would be fun if he actually made a real appearance. So we called him up and he said, yeah, he would do it. So we flew out to do it. He did the show. We started editing the show. And as I watched it, I'm going, oh, my God, this is not good. And we thought it's so much better to just see the back of his head with me doing the voice than to actually see the real Steinbrenner, because his acting was wanting, to say the least. So I had to call him up and tell him the news that he was being cut from the show. So I called Yankee Stadium and I asked to talk to him. And then he got on the phone. I said, Mr. Steinbrenner, this is Larry David calling from the Seinfeld show. And he said, yeah, yes, Larry, what's going on? I said, well, Mr. Steinbrenner, you know, I watched the show. And he said, yeah, you can tell me. I'm a big boy. I said, well, it's not working. We have to cut you from the show. And he was actually okay with it.
Let's talk a bit about Curb Your Enthusiasm. And I want to begin with a clip. This actually is on the subject of death. In this case, you're walking down the street in Los Angeles and spot your old friend Marty Funkhauser, who's played by Bob Einstein, and his mother has recently died. Let's listen.
Hey! Funkhauser!
My God, I can't believe it. You're out? What are you doing?
This helps my emotions. Jogging is the best thing for me.
So mourners exercise. I didn't know that.
I don't know if mourners exercise. It's just good for me.
Interesting. I'm going to remember that next time I lose a close member of my family.
Yeah. Jogging.
Yeah.
Helps everything.
By the way, I called your house. I left a condolence message. I never got a return call.
Well, I had a few things on my mind.
Yeah, still. It's a little discourteous.
Let me explain something to you.
Sure.
I lost my dad a year ago. My mother just died. I'm an orphan, okay?
You're what?
I'm an orphan.
Orphan?
Yeah, an orphan.
You're a little too old to be an orphan.
No, if you don't have parents, you're an orphan.
Oh, you could be 70 and be an orphan?
You could be 100 and be an orphan.
Oh, you can't be 100 and be an orphan.
Yeah, you can.
Okay. Little Orphan Funkhauser.
That's our guest Larry David and Bob Einstein. On Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yes, I'm upset because he didn't respond to my call. He never returned my call.
A little discourteous.
I thought it was discourteous.
When I read about you, your friends say that you are actually a nice and generous person. Does it bother you that you've kind of created this image of yourself as this insensitive jerk?
Oh, God, no, not at all. Why? No, because that's doesn't bother me in the least. I'm quite happy about it. I'm way closer to being the guy on Curb than the guy who's talking to you right now.
Really?
I know I'm often described as a nice guy, but by the way, I think the guy on Curb is a nice guy. He's just very honest.
Okay. Well, the guy on Curb would probably think that the guy on Curb is a nice guy, but I don't know if that many other people would think that.
but why? Why isn't he nice? He's not mean. I don't think he's mean. I think he does nice things.
He just kind of can't let some things go that he might.
Yeah. Well, that doesn't mean he's not nice.
Okay. You know, I
think he's expressing a lot of the things that many people think about.
Right, but just are too inhibited to say.
Exactly.
Comedian and TV writer-producer Larry David speaking to Fresh Air contributor Dave Davies in 2015. The new season of David's Curb Your Enthusiasm begins Sunday on HBO after a 6-year absence. Coming up, we remember Playboy founder Hugh Hefner, who died Wednesday at age 91. This is Fresh Air.